Hey, beautiful soul. This is the Menopause Coach Podcast with me, your host, Adele Johnston. I'm helping you create a vibrant life of joy and happiness without your menopause stealing your personal power and sass. Together, we're making menopause mainstream.
The sound of the coffee machine in the morning then brings me the smell of coffee, and what follows then is me just being in complete heaven before I've even had my first sip. My mouth is watering, my heart is excited, my brain is like, oh, it's coffee time. You know, that first sip of the first morning coffee, if you're a coffee person, you are so getting my jam right now, and we are friends. So that is what we call conditioned reflex.
Welcome to another episode of the Menopause Coach Podcast with me, your host as always, Adele Johnston, the menopause coach and now avid educator. Look at that being added to my title. So this is exciting. We are here for another episode today, and I want to explore with you together, us in the collective, innovative and gentle approaches to improving our lives with a positive approach, a whole lot of fun, and a whole lot less of myths, fads, and gimmicks on the world of dieting. And we're going to explore three really gentle ways that we can, and we do within our groups, within our collectives and our communities already with our ladies, help you to lose body fat and diet without dieting. It's so, so important. No restriction, no hard and fast approaches. No punishment, geez. This is about enjoying life. This is the one life you are ever going to have. And we have to be able to look at that as every day is a gift. Our life currency is ours to be enjoyed with fun, not to punish ourselves and put ourselves into a very miserable emotional state of mind. So let's start by reframing our understanding of dieting, because that word itself, there are so many within the space of health that I work upon and within that will say, Adele, I'm not anti-diet, but I just don't know how to encourage my clients to lose weight without feeling restricted, to drop body fat without thinking they have to do certain things that are deemed to be more in the diet culture. And this was something that I used to ask a lot of the time myself when I started out all those years ago inside the coaching space. But as we start to evolve and we start to find the things that actually work, over a decade, 15 years that I've been working inside women's health, I developed the reclamation formula, and it's such a beautiful, very positive psychology-based approach, but very gentle in how we actually do what we do. And boom, we get beautiful, long-lasting results with all of our ladies. And we don't do anything different for each of them. Yes, okay, we might spend some time deep inside one of the pillars, more so than we do with the other, but each of the pillars play a key role. So we've already talked about the reclamation formula in past episodes. You know what that is by now. You know I'm referencing nutrition, lifestyle, and mind, and we're not going inside that today. Instead, I'm going to take you deep inside the space of what we do, how we do it, through three beautiful and gentle steps, methods, as I call them, within that formula that really help what we do. So we're reframing our understanding of what diets actually are, because traditionally, when we think about the word diet, it actually was what we referred to with the food that we have, the nutrition that we eat. And over decades and decades of diet culture and clubs, diets have become associated with strict rules, with calorie counting, feelings of deprivation for many of us, yeah, good or bad foods, clean eating, treats, cheats, I've heard it all, sins, points. We've just gotten this really messy, noisy connotation that surrounds this word diet, haven't we? So it's no wonder so many women that I have the privilege and joy of speaking with are just so lost with what to do and where to turn, because I hear it time and time again, Adele, I've literally done every diet under the sun and I cannot lose this weight. And I'm like, yes, because that's where we're going wrong. Okay, that's what we don't need. So at least you've tried that. You know that it's not working for you in the long term. You might see some rapid losses over the first 2, 3 or 4 weeks.
weeks, and then it becomes difficult and challenging to maintain that, and you regain it back plus some. This is not unusual. So if that is happening to you right now, please know that you are beautifully held and seen and loved within this collective energy, and I want to be able to help you. What if we could achieve weight loss goals that you have in a more sustainable, fun, an enjoyable way? And you can, I promise you. I promise that there are ways and methods that you can use to achieve this and still head away for a girls' weekend trip like my client Julie is doing this weekend with her girlfriends down to London to enjoy cocktails and foods and look forward to being part of that journey, not resisting it, not feeding it, not thinking, oh God, like I don't want to go do this because I can't. I'm going to have to look at the menu and order the salad. No, no, you do not. You get to go enjoy it. And the conversation that we had today in her one-to-one was, have the best time in London, enjoy the cocktails, and I'll see you at check-in on Monday. Because if we can explore this and understand that there are multiple methods that we can use, one of the big ones, again, enjoying our life, I'm going to talk you through three of the core methods that sit within the framework that I use and teach and educate my clients with. So these three methods do just this, yeah, help you be part of your journey through fun and enjoyment. And this is exactly how I've helped Julie herself drop 10 pounds and 17 centimeters in just 12 weeks. And we've done that even though she has had a massive recovery period due to quite an invasive surgery. So she was not able to exercise or move for nearly 10 weeks, but a big recovery window and also an injury. Yeah, and we've had a lot of emotional impacts because life happens, right? Life is part of our journey when we take this step through our diet plan. So it's about understanding that it would be quite easy, especially in Julie's stance, to have said, well, this is not going to work for me and I'm just going to step away from these strategies. But she didn't. And there was one core reason why. Because they are simple. They're easy to follow. They work. Yeah. If I was to summarize that in just one thing, I would say to you, the one thing why this worked is they work. So let's start with method one, mindful eating. Now, please do not be thinking, oh God, I've heard this before. Yes, it sounds easy when we say those two words, but let me share this with you a little bit. All too often, you, me, us, everyone, the collective we, are living our life mindlessly, not paying attention or fully paying attention to what we are feeling, to what we are experiencing or doing. We're living in a life on autopilot. And I invite you to see just how true this is for you right now. I had one of my businesswoman clients message me this week to say, Adele, I accepted your invitation. So I will make invitations to my client base depending on what we're doing and where we are. And one of the invitations was around, take a mindful moment next time you are on a commute of any kind. Yeah, preferably on foot, so that you can watch and look around you and just absorb. Absorb what is happening, absorb how people are behaving, and witness how mindless a society we are becoming and have became. So this client had messaged, she's like, Adele, I've taken on board your invitation, and actually, I notice how mindless most people are. And here's what she shared. She shared that she witnessed people walking with their heads down in their mobile phone screens. I'm guilty of doing that from time to time. I'm sure you are as well. Glancing up to avoid walking into each other. So we see that all too often, don't we? And people walking past one another without so much as an eye contact or smile. And as she walked, she seen fresh daffodils that started to rise through the grass. The springtime sun shining through the sides of buildings onto the streets. And every so often she'd spot the solo commuter that was like her having a very mindful commute, and they'd smile at each other with this eye contact that just kind of said without speaking any words, I see you, yeah, I'm here with you. Like, look at all these crazy people that are not living in the moment. And I mean, holy cow, like that's rare these days, isn't it? That you would actually walk down a busy commuting street, or you go out on your Steps for Health in the morning and you pass a fellow Steps for Health commuter. 9 times out of 10, they're not looking up at you. And that's something that we are seeing more and more often, right? This mindlessness approach to life and everyday activity. So our first approach is taking that mindful concept and bulking it up to become mindful eating. Mindful eating about paying attention to the present moment and savoring each bite of our food, tasting that first bite, which subsequently, by the way, scientifically has been proven to be the tastiest bite of your entire meal, that first bite. So we want to listen to our body's hunger and fullness cues. If anyone's familiar with the hunger scale, this is something that I use beautifully as a tool within our toolbox when we coach, when we get clear on our hunger levels. Yeah, if you're not familiar with it, come and ask me. So instead of focusing on screens and distractions, we become present and we allow the senses that we are so beautifully blessed with having to do their job and be a part of our experience of eating. You don't just eat with your mouth. Okay, your digestive process actually begins from the moment you smell a food or you see a food or even when you hold a food. Have you ever noticed that if you walk past somewhere and the smell of food catches your nose, your nostrils have this dance party and your pupils widen and you inhale this beautiful big breath because you're like, oh, ooh, yes, that smells good. Yeah, you take this very vibrant, beautiful inhale of breath and it becomes deeper, purposeful. You start to salivate. Oh, those of us here right now that have studied business or psychology of any kind, you'll be so familiar with what I'm going to share now because it's just come to my head when I've said that word salivate. Pavlov's dogs. Yeah, if you're with me, you're with me. If you're not and you're thinking, what the hell are you talking about? I'm just going to quickly share what I'm telling you here, what I'm talking about. So Pavlov's dogs, this was an experiment I learned about many moons ago in university. And it was conducted by a professor called Ivan Pavlov. From memory, it was around about the 20th century. And his research aimed to study the process of what we call classical conditioning. And don't worry too much about this. This is kind of the psychology side of it. But basically what this involves is we learn associations between certain stimuli. Yeah, things. Things that we engage with or we understand go together. So when we make this relevant to us right now, the smell of the food as we walk past the place, it might be a shop or an alleyway or a house, one of our neighbours is cooking, the association that we then have with, oh yes, I'm hungry, or oh, that smells amazing. Yeah, and we start to salivate. In Pavlov's experiment, he used dogs as subjects. Yeah, and he noticed that the dogs naturally salivated when they were presented with food. So again, the dog wouldn't necessarily need to eat the food, but as soon as the dog was presented with the food and they simply seen it or smelt it, they would start to salivate. So their mouth would water. So Pavlov then introduced a kind of natural, what we call a natural stimulus. So this is something that would then become associated with that food coming. And he used a bell. So before presenting the dog with food, he would ring the bell. Now, initially, when this experiment was happening, the dogs were kind of no effect to the bell happening. You know, they wouldn't salivate. They wouldn't show any response really to the sound of the bell. But the more often it was then a stimuli in the matrix of this, it was just a noise to them to begin with, but then the food would arrive. So the dogs learned that the sound of the bell meant that food was coming and they would salivate. Now, what happened over the kind of duration of this experiment, or I don't even remember how long it was now, they repeated the pairings of this. So we would have repeated pairings of this bell, this natural stimulus of the ringing of the bell. Then the dogs would be presented with their food that brought on salivation. So they were saliva glands were just going wild and having a party in their mouth. Now, what Pavlov observed with this is that the dogs began to associate the sound of the bell with the arrival of food. And the longer that they produced this experiment, the dogs actually started to salivate in response to the bell alone. They didn't even need the food to be presented to them before they learned the response of the bell means food, and I then know what that means. My brain remembers it, and now my mouth is watering. So this is what we call a conditioned reflex. It's something we've learned, and it's behavioural. So how many of us, after you've heard that, have this conditioned reflex to say that, for example, for me personally, the sound of the coffee machine in the morning then brings me the smell of coffee, and what follows then is me just being in complete heaven before I've even had my first sip. My mouth is watering, my heart is excited, my brain is like, oh, it's coffee time. You know, that first sip of the first morning coffee, if you're a coffee person, you are so getting my jam right now, and we are friends. So that is what we call conditioned reflex. We've learned that behavior. Another one as well, for those of you that are similar ages to me, I'm 40, is the sound of that gumball machine at the bowling alley as a kid. You'd pop your 20 pence in, for those of us in the UK, and you would turn the dial. Remember, you'd pop it in the slot, you'd turn the dial round, and it'd make that clunking noise. And that was enough to just bring so much excitement of knowing what was dropping and coming next when all the sweeties would fall out. And that, for me, was always a big excitement before I'd even eaten any of the sweets. So Pavlov's experiment was one that demonstrated this concept of classical conditioning. Yeah, when we talk about that, we talk about this whole, we associate meaningful stimulus together. And it leads to that learned response in psychology practice. So quite interesting, right? If you've never heard of that study before, well, it's all over the internet, you can certainly go and read it, but now I have explained it in a very high level summary. So this type of learning, as we come back into practice here, is really crucial for us to understand various behaviours as human beings on how we then process things. Yeah, and Pavlov really laid that foundation for us to study a bit more behaviours around influences. Why am I sharing this with you? Well, kind of jumped in here as I thought about it, but equally, over the dieting culture that we have inadvertently created is this negative stimuli with words. We've developed, through various different reasons, good, bad, clean, dirty, treat, cheat, sin, points, you know, in this world of dieting. And that can then resonate inside a space of restriction of, oh, if I do this, I'm going to have to insert diet here. And that's going to lead to restriction. So I'm here to help you reflect, taking it away from what we can't eat to instead focusing on that pleasure, that fun, that nourishment that food can bring us, and knowing that there's no such thing as foods that are cheats or treats or sins or points. There's food, and actually there's quantity and quality of different foods. Now, again, for you, you might be someone who struggles to stop consuming foods, and we will touch upon that as we go through some of these methods. But I purely want you to think about, within method one of mindful eating, this really involves being present during your meals. Yeah, really engaging in your senses and truly enjoying the experience of eating. If you can use your hands, use them. Yeah, it doesn't matter if you're having hot sauce chicken wings. Get in there. Get your fingers in there. Allow your senses to do what they're designed to do. I mean, I don't know anyone that can eat chicken wings with fork and knife. So enjoy the process, engage your senses, yeah? By slowing down and savouring each bite of your food, we can become more attuned to our body's signals, yeah? Hunger and fullness. If you really truly allow yourself to experience what that is, you will learn your own body's communication style with you, and that will be very clear when you're thinking, oh, actually, yeah, I'm quite full right now. Or, no, I could still keep going. I've got room. So that's really clear. And it helps you to balance out some eating habits. And, have some weight loss without the need for restriction. Yeah, I don't know about you, but when someone tells me not to push the big red button, I want to push it even more, and that's all I think about. And the same psychology practice is true for many women that I speak with when it comes to food. Yeah, there's a list of foods you cannot have because they carry X amount of sins or points, or it just adds this whole big red button scenario to the situation. So the next time that you sit down for a meal, take a moment to appreciate the colours before you've even done anything. What colours do you see? What textures are there? And flavours of your food? Yeah, eat slowly, chew thoroughly. That's why you have teeth, and pause between bites to check in with your body's hunger levels. How does it taste? How does it feel? Are you enjoying it? And what does the experience feel like for you? Yeah, a little word of warning on this one, and I always say this to my ladies. This may very well open your awareness to foods that you are eating that you actually don't enjoy after you become mindful. I make zero apologies for that, because what's happened over time is you've become mindless about the foods that you have, and you eat them regardless of whether you're enjoying them. Now, just remember that all foods carry energy, and you get to make the decision on quantity and quality of that energy. Yeah, that you are putting into your body. You are making the choice to do that. So let's be mindful and act in such a manner that we get to then say yes or no to those foods. I'm enjoying that or I'm not. And if I'm not enjoying it, do I want to continue? Or do I want to actually say, do you know what? This is not enjoyable. I'm not going to have any more. I'm going to have something that I will enjoy and put that energy into my body in a very happy, joy-filled way. And that nicely moves us along to method two, intuitive eating. So we've looked at mindful eating. Let's look at intuitive eating. There are 10 intuitive eating principles, but we're not going to cover those today. Instead, I want to talk to you a bit about our second approach here, and intuitive eating about reconnecting with your body's natural hunger and fullness signals. So rather than relying on external rules or restrictions, it's about trusting that your body will guide you towards what you need and how it feels. But this isn't something that all of us have mastered, and I get that. Sometimes I will work with a lady who has never understood what hunger feels like. Other times I will work with ladies who fear hunger feelings. And this can come back to childhood influences. Yeah, of a time when you've maybe been really hungry as a child and you never want to feel that again. So you act by making sure you never are hungry. But that doesn't help you then when you are in more of an obese or morbidly obese category of health. Yeah, and we don't want that. We want you to live a very healthy, happy life. So we want to look at this from intuitive styles of approaches and living in a manner that you can truly develop this healthier relationship with food and achieve your weight loss goals without the need for strict diets or for excessive calorie counting. And I mean, like, imagine this, right? Imagine learning your hunger signals and your own body's communication signals between your brain and body, that you're able to then be like, ooh, yeah, do you know what? It's before dinner or it's before lunch and I need a snack. Or, oh yeah, it's lunchtime, but do you know what? I'm not actually that hungry right now. So I'm just going to allow that to push by a little bit. And yeah, I'll get something when I'm hungry. Yeah, living in that approach is so freeing. And as we age, we actually start to lose some of our muscle volume. And with that, we will have a reduced metabolic requirement. What that basically means is we will have less requirement for the same amount of energy and food. So for those of us resistance training, I see you, we can avoid this and we can help to prolong that muscle volume and retain it. We therefore have better caloric requirements for our body. In other words, the more muscle volume we have, the more calories and energy that we will require, more food that we can eat. So instead of following this rigid meal plan with restrictions and rules and all the things, try tuning into your body's signals of hunger and fullness. What does it feel like for you? And eat when you're hungry, stop when you're full. Now you will only learn learn that by trying. You will learn that by following principles. You will learn that by being guided. Yeah, but choose foods that make you feel energized and satisfied. And this is really important in this entire process. It's not about the strict rules of restriction. It's about allowing yourself to taste, experience, and try. So how often do you find yourself comfort eating or eating for convenience? And I ask that question with love because we all do it. I comfort eat, I soothe, I celebrate, I do all the things with food. It's not just about nutrition. But there are two main risk zone areas that my team and I identify in the majority of ladies that we support inside our various programs. And why I raise it is because without awareness of these two risk zones, you'll not be able to master the art of method two, intuitive eating. Okay, this is really important. So we want to be aware of when we are comfort eating or when we are eating for convenience, because those two risk zones are what can really derail when you are unprepared, yeah? The convenience side. When you are emotionally triggered, the emotional side. Knowing that food will not resolve, okay? If anything, it's going to create further disruption to your confidence and happiness. Then method three, movement and joy jar. Our third approach, beautiful, is about movement for joy and linked within your joy jar. So instead of viewing exercise as a punishment for overindulgence or a means to burn calories or even earn food, I've heard this before, we want to shift our perspective and focus on movement that brings us joy and pleasure. And you get to have that, I promise. Movement for joy involves finding activities that we genuinely enjoy doing, that make you feel good. It could be dancing, it could be hill walking or hiking or swimming. It does not matter. It's movement for your body. And we prioritize these activities that bring us the most joy. We are more likely to stick to them long term and to reap those physical and mental health rewards and benefits. Think about the activities that bring you joy. The part where your joy jar comes into this is by incorporating joy jar moments into your day. Yeah, what really truly makes you feel happy. And I want you to just truly think about that. It could be the simplest of things, like your favorite pair of fluffy socks on a cold rainy day being freshly laundered in your drawer. It may be right down to walking in the forest at all the different seasons of the year, but as it starts to turn into spring or summer and the trees are filling out and the birds are singing, that you're then called to go for additional walks at different parts of the day, morning for sunrise, afternoon for sundown. This is about understanding what truly makes you feel happy and brings you joy. So you can incorporate some joy jar movement activities together. So fun, right? So fun. Oh, life changing. So whether it's a leisurely walk in nature, like I've shared, or whether it's a dance class that you do that you think, I really enjoy this and I just want to go do it, go and do it. Find ways to move your body that feel good for you. And instead of thinking as exercise as punishment, we think of movement for life. Oh, so powerful. Let's have a little think about this together now as we come to the end of this episode. Dieting doesn't have to be synonymous with restriction. We don't have to think about the word diet and think, oh Christ, this is going to be hard. We don't have to think about hard rules. We don't have to think about punishments or restrictions. Instead, we get to think of this as mindful eating, intuitive eating. Yeah, mindfully being present with our senses, intuitively appreciating, am I hungry? Am I full? Am I emotionally triggered? Am I not planned or prepared and therefore I'm in a grab-and-go convenience mindset? And movement for joy with your joy jar. What can you do that can help you to achieve these weight loss goals that you have in a gentle and sustainable way? And I promise you that if you can adopt even just these three methods, there are so many more that we do inside our reclamation formula, you are going to see results. And those results are going to be lasting, And I want you to remember that this is not just about losing weight. I know that 97% of women that we speak with, that's what they want as a goal. But what if I told you that when you work with us, we don't actually put you into a diet? Your weight loss, or rather we call it what your body releases, is a byproduct of what we teach you and what we do with you. And it's that whole self-love connection that happens. So you will release what your body no longer deems to be required. And that is beautiful. Yeah, it's not just about losing the weight though. It's about nourishing our bodies, the only bodies that we will ever have. Mine is mine, yours is yours, and we don't get another. It's about nurturing your soul energy, finding joy in the process. So I want to celebrate you. I want to put a massive thank you out for tuning into this episode today of the Menopause Coach Podcast. And if you've enjoyed this episode, I really do want you to consider sharing it with someone else. Share it with someone that you truly love, admire, respect, and that you want to help them on their journey. And of course, it goes without saying, if you've not already subscribed, then please do come and hit that subscribe or follow button and leave us a review. That's the only one thing that I ever ask in return for every weekly episode, is that you can at least subscribe if you haven't already, and share a review if you haven't already. Because in the world of podcasting, the more subscribers and reviews that we have on these episodes, the more the algorithm, that bloody word, will help us to grow, the more people that will know about all of these amazing, beautiful, and really positive, compassionate ways of supporting themselves in their menopause journey. So if you can do just one thing today, make sure you've done that. And remember, be gentle with yourself on your journey to a healthier, happier you. And I will see you next week in our next episode. I truly hope this episode has sparked something vibrant inside of you. I ask only one thing. To help keep these episodes coming, please subscribe and share with another in your life. That's how we reach more women worldwide, and we help them step into their power. Because together, we are working to remove any of the stigma and taboo that surrounds menopause. This does not need to be a daunting, a scary, a taboo time in anyone's life. So, together, let's make menopause mainstream.